Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Francisco L. Borges and the Melville Charitable Trust.
This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Capitol Avenue in Hartford is a main artery, but did you know at one time that area was farmland? From farms to the backdrop of industries that powered our nation in wars, the neighborhood of Frog Hollow has changed again and again. Who were the people who settled here, and why were some able to leave while others could not? Author Susan Campbell explores those questions and fills in the history of a part of Hartford that many of us know little about in her book, appropriately named Frog Hollow. Coming up, we'll hear from residents of this capital city neighborhood, and we want to hear from you. Did you or your family grow up in Frog Hollow? What memories or questions do you have today? You can join us, 860-275-7266, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I want to welcome back to the show Susan Campbell. You know her name, a longtime journalist, and now a freelance columnist for the Hartford Current. She's also a distinguished lecturer at the University of New Haven, and her new book, Frog Hollow, Stories from an American Neighborhood, we'll be talking about that for the full hour. Susan, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I always take pleasure in learning about the history of Connecticut because I'm not from the state. And this is a good introduction to an area that I, like many people, have driven through time and time again. Maybe I've stopped in at a coffee shop or gotten Jamaican food. But what drew you to wanting to focus so much of your time researching this neighborhood?
It's a terrible story. When I worked full-time at the Current, I was frequently angry, and occasionally I would not just pop off at someone, believe it or not. I would just take a walk.
That's a good thing.
Get out and walk. Keep your mouth shut and go walk. And I found that I found myself drawn to Frog Hollow more than Asylum Hill. The Current sits kind of on the boundaries of both. The Asylum Hill had too many stoplights, and I needed to stomp without interruption. So it was strictly, it was a good place to stomp off my mad, but I kept going back to it.
Some of your readership who are listening now know that you're from Missouri.
Yep.
This part of the city of Hartford, Frog Hollow, actually reminds you of a town or
which
city.
Which makes no sense
so
at all.
Explain that. Yeah.
I will. That, too, is a weird story. I'm from southwest Missouri, and the industry there was iron ore mining, which just ripped the land up. And the miners would come in, and all the industry around it would come in, and they would follow the vein to wherever. And the vein was pretty thick in Webb City, Joplin area where I grew up. And then as they played out the mines, they followed the vein out to Oklahoma and Kansas. It left these little towns that were, this is not polite, but basically shells of what they'd once been. And there were abandoned old brick factory buildings that, you know, were pigeon roosts, and like two-story pigeon roosts in my hometown. And I was always drawn to those buildings because I always wondered what went on there. And I found myself, as I was walking through Frog Hollow, feeling this weird sense of home. It doesn't look, we don't have perfect sixes in Missouri. We don't have.
These are the brick apartment
buildings. The brick apartment buildings that are so quintessential, Frog Hollow and a lot of other parts of Hartford. But I just kept coming back to it. And it wasn't just all the brick. It was the abandoned buildings and the sense that something happened here. And I missed it.
And so you wanted to tell that story. So how, we're in 2019. When did you first begin researching this neighborhood?
1892. I think I start, you know, there's never a definite beginning date for me when I have a longer project. It's more, oh, that's interesting. And I start a folder, a file. Sometimes it's just notes that I lose, and sometimes I actually legitimately type it into the computer. But it was before I left the Current in 2012 where I just kept finding out things accidentally on the search for something else entirely. So I would say it's easily been 9 years. Isn't that sad that it took me that long?
We know you put a lot of work into this book as readers take a look into it and see all the history. But let's start with just geography. I mentioned Capitol Ave, one of the main arteries. So when we're in the city of Hartford, where is Frog Hollow located and how big is it?
So this is really imprecise, and it really depends on who you ask. But basically, it's 17 acres that's bounded by roughly Capitol Avenue, Washington Street, although there's some discussion that's too far, down to New Britain Avenue, give or take. Trinity College is on the tail end of the southern end, out to, and this is where it gets weird, because some people think that parts of Parkville actually could be considered parts of Frog Hollow. Let's just say Pope Park. If you know Hartford at all, that's roughly the boundary you're looking at.
When we think about Frog Hollow, I know some people wonder, where did the name come from? So maybe we should start there.
Okay, so I am willing to be proven wrong, but everything I read, a lot of when I first came here, I was drawn to the name too, and someone told me that was because of the French Canadians who moved into that area, and they did. But in fact, the name really reflected literal amphibians. Willimantic has nothing on Hartford for frog stories. Not that there was a time when everyone got awakened, but at the corner of Marsh and Broad, there was a large population of frogs. I think my next book will be Frogs of the Revolution. Frogs roll. But it literally was frogs.
You take us through some of the residents as early as the Babcock family, mm-hmm. and their property actually was located in an area that was that had water. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
The Babcocks had basically a 100-acre farm that ate up a large part of the Washington Street side of Frog Hollow. And the farm was basically run by Dolly Babcock, because her husband was busy running a newspaper, American Mercury. And there was one point when they were digging a well, and they hit water so quickly that the workers had to scramble out of the hole, or else they would have been drowned. They lost tools. They lost everything. So it was this plentiful well that people made the paper. People wrote about this incredible well with water like morning. It sounds good.
And it helped the family.
Big time. The family did very well. The family was successful, not just with the newspaper, but also with their farm.
So when we're driving around Frog Hollow, we'll come across Babcock Street. This is named after this family.
Right. And that was, again, when I was stomping through on my mat, I would see that name and figure it was probably a family, right? Putnam, probably a family. And yes, in fact, it was a really interesting family.
Because of the water, how did that then encourage this rise in industry mm-hmm. in Frog Hollow?
Industry follows the power, and at the time that would have been water. And so this amazing well basically said there's a lot of water here. The Hog River, the Park River, former Park River, was this wonderful artery that various industrial giants could hook their machines up to.
Industrial giants, let's walk through some of those. I know on the show previously we've talked about Pope and his bicycles, but also rifle companies, sewing machines. So tell us a little bit about the people that built these industries and the people that came to work for them.
So the same way that when an immigrant family comes, they often bring other family members and then other people from their village, from wherever. In the same way, one little industry starts, then another industry picks up. And the corridor along Capitol Avenue, which was also known as Rifle Lane, it's had like 15 different names, was where a lot of this started. And among the various things that came out of Frog Hollow, Sharp's rifle, which both the North and the South used in the Civil War, which was a horrible event, but was very financially successful for anyone who was a part of the Sharp's Rifle Company. Widgets, machine parts, weed sewing machine, which rivaled Singer, and Colonel Pope, who was just this fascinating person who wanted to sell his bicycle, which weighed a zillion tons and cost way too much for most people. So he brought one down from Boston, where he lived, on the train, got on it at the railroad station, and rode it to Frog Hollow. By the time he got to the weed sewing machine, where he wanted to convince people, hey, this would only take two more turns of the screw to build this as opposed to a sewing machine, he had a crowd of people following him. No one had ever seen this, a bicycle. So it made quite an entrance for him.
I'm in the studio with me today is Susan Campbell, author of this new book, Frog Hollow, Stories from an American Neighborhood. We're going to be learning about the history, but also hearing from people who lived and live today in Frog Hollow. You can join us, too. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, at Where We Live. In your book, you wrote that Frog Hollow was kind of like Silicon Valley. That might be surprising to people.
Well, yeah, I think most people, if they think of Frog Hollow at all, if they don't have any personal connection to it, it's that place they drive through to get to work and then go back home. But it was where the great minds came. And again, industry brought, you know, one industry brought another industry. These amazing designers and engineers congregated, like, oh, you can try this. And this is not to discount the Colt factory at all. It was wonderful as well. But it really wasn't that different for a factory to build a sewing machine and then switch to bicycles and then switch to electric cars, which they did.
So when we look at the Perfect Sixes and other architecture that still remains in Frog Hollow, these were all built to house the workers in these factories.
Yeah, and actually, Mr. Pope was an incredible person in that he was not only brilliant and had a million ideas that he actually followed up on. He also thought that if his workers were happy, they would work better. And so they had wonderful lunchrooms in the factory. They had he was responsible for a lot of the paved roads so that people could ride his bicycles and eventually his cars. And he knew that housing was a big part of a family's safety. So, yeah, a lot of those Perfect Sixes had generations of factory workers.
With the rise in industry came the formation of labor unions, mm-hmm. Also the insurance industry. But where was the insurance? Is where Asylum Hill is today?
Yeah, more so. Not so much, but, you know, it's the wealthier people live on the hill and the rest of us live in the valley. That's kind of how it worked.
Again, Susan Campbell is in studio with me as we talk about her new book, Frog Hollow. So when did industry then begin to decline?
It began to decline, in Frog Hollow at least, after the turn of the last century, for all kinds of reasons. There were perfect storms of the growing suburbs and the ability to move more freely, either with public transportation or new cars, to the suburbs. And so a lot of the suburban towns started offering breaks to the big industries, and so they took those attractive
breaks. That sounds familiar.
Doesn't it? You know, that's the one thing I kept finding out about this book. Oh, my God, we've learned nothing. We're still doing this. But really, by 1910, 1915, 1920, at post-World War I especially, mm-hmm. Frog Hollow was starting to be quiet.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. We're going to continue talking about Frog Hollow, Stories from an American Neighborhood. It's the new book from Susan Campbell. We're also going to hear from two women with connections to Frog Hollow. And if you remember this neighborhood, maybe you grew up there, you didn't think about all the history as you drive to work, you can join us too. The number 860-275-7266 or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Susan Campbell writes in her new book, for most of Hartford commuters anxious to get to work, Frog Hollow is trash blowing on the streets and men hanging out on Park Street. If you're zipping by and only half paying attention, the place has a rundown feel. But this scrappy little plot of land has a history packed with innovation and technology birthed by wave after wave of immigrants. That's from Frog Hollow, Stories from an American Neighborhood, written again by Susan Campbell, who's with me today in studio. Her book describes the people, but also the forces that have shaped the neighborhood to be what it is today. And coming up, we're going to hear from some longtime residents of Frog Hollow, and you can join us too. The number 860-275-7266, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. So before the break, Susan, you were talking about what led to the industry decline. And so by the 60s, what was left in Frog Hollow? When we think about all this housing that came up to support the workers, but when the workers left, who remained?
There were still some people who, in fact, I talked to a couple of families where they remained in Hartford even while they worked in the suburbs. That idea of the American dream with the little house and the white picket fence really didn't resonate with them. They loved their neighborhood. But you did have a significant egress of a lot of families who had worked in the factories.
There were some big changes that happened. One, the Park River was buried. Explain why that happened.
Good question. I'm still not entirely sure. It was an engineering feat, and I couldn't tell you why they did it.
But meanwhile, when we think about all of this housing, you would think that, well, this is an opportunity for a good quality living for residents. But that didn't actually happen because of policies from the federal government on down. You've done a lot of reporting on redlining. So tell us what happened exactly.
There were a series of things that happened, and none of them good. I'll just give you an example as far as redlining. Back in the 30s, the government was going to, just to boil it down, and this is in gross generalizations, the government was going to figure out for whom would mortgages be approved. And so they would send people through these neighborhoods who would just jot little notes down. And if they saw any person of color, they would make a note as this person may not pay back a mortgage, so we might not want to grant a mortgage in this particular neighborhood. Literally, it was that capricious. And over time, when people wanted to buy the perfect sixes, perhaps not rent them, they were denied mortgages for no good reason. And if you look at those maps, and Trinity College has done some fantastic work on this, if you look on the maps, the maps where it's color-coded for, yes, write the yes, back the mortgages, you might want to think about it, oh, my God, don't. That absolutely is a reflection of the poverty in neighborhoods around Connecticut, Hartford, and specifically Frog Hollow today.
So in the 60s and 70s, who were the people that were living there, even if the quality of the housing had deteriorated?
Yeah, I think what happened was people who saw money in them, their hills, were buying up those perfect sixes. They weren't necessarily maintaining them as they could have. So it was people who were still working in Hartford. The racial demographics were changing over. But again, I was surprised to find that there were some people who just would not leave. This is my neighborhood.
Other policies that impacted the neighborhood, looking at the construction of highways, we're still talking about I-84
right.
Cutting
and
through the city.
It's one of those things where the highways were built for not all bad reasons, but the way they were constructed, they plowed through some of these vibrant neighborhoods for no good reason other than to give suburbanites an easier shot into G-Fox. And in the same way, Park River, when it was buried, Park River was a sewer. It had been treated as a dumping ground by not only industries but the people who lived around it. We would definitely approach it in a different way now other than just bury it.
So you saw a lot of absentee landlords at time as well.
Yeah, and some really creative protests against that, like take rats to someone's house and turn them loose in the yard. I believe there was one instance where people took rats to the person who owned Perfect Sixes and was letting them go. He also owned a restaurant, so they dropped some rats off there. I thought that was very creative.
You can join our conversation. Did you grow up in Frog Hollow? The number 860-275-7266. A longtime resident of the Frog Hollow neighborhood is Alta Lash. She's joining us by phone. Alta, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Lucy. Nice to be here.
I understand
Hi, Alta.
I understand, Alta, you're the executive director of United Connection Action for Neighborhoods, so very vested in the communities here. But let's hear a little bit more about your memories growing up in Frog Hollow. Where did you live?
I grew up on Hamilton Street, 78 Hamilton Street, which is right near Pope Park. And I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and the neighborhood was an immigrant neighborhood even at that point in time. My friends were Portuguese, French, Irish, Polish, Armenian. It was a very diverse neighborhood even in the 60s and the 50s.
Tell us a little bit about your family's background, and as we hear Susan talking about the forces that changed the demographic, the dynamics, what do you remember seeing?
Well, my family originally came from Poland, my grandparents on both sides, and they moved to Pennsylvania coal mines. However, when the Depression hit, there was a migration to Hartford because there were jobs here. And that's how my family got to Hartford. That was around, the late 30s. And so that they settled in Hartford and stayed in Hartford. And when I was born, I grew up in that neighborhood. I went to Immaculate Conception School, which is now Templo Fay. I've just been very tied to the neighborhood since then.
What do you remember about the neighborhood declining, again, because of absentee landlords, the fact that a lot of the jobs left? What do you remember seeing, and how did residents respond?
There was a very clear deterioration of buildings in the neighborhood. And initially, there was a large migration of Puerto Ricans from Clay Hill and from directly from the island. And so there was, in most people's minds, a connection between those two events, the deterioration and the influx of Puerto Rican immigrants. Mm-hmm. However, that was not by any means the whole picture. As Susan had mentioned, there has been the influence of redlining for many years in that neighborhood, and combined with blockbusting and, you know, real estate agents' influence on the neighborhoods. I remember when I was starting organizing, real estate agents were sending postcards to people saying, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so moved into your neighborhood, and they were a racially mixed couple. It said, pay them a visit, and if you want to sell your house, we're there. And then real estate agents also began walking up and down the neighborhood and targeting, like, elderly folks, cutting their grass or things like that, and said, you know, oh, the neighborhood's not what it used to be. You know, if you want to get out, I'll give you a good price. We can sell your house, and you can, you know, move to a neighborhood with people like you. And that was, subtly was going on. At the same time, investors through the banks started blockbusting. They would buy a house, like Lawrence Street is a perfect example. Buy a house on Lawrence Street, move in people who they knew, they weren't screened, they just knew they would cause problems. And then they would go to the owners of the houses adjacent to that and lowball them an offer. And they were able to pick up, like, apartment building after apartment building for that purpose. And needless to say, they didn't invest in the buildings.
Today on Where We Live, we're learning about the Frog Hollow neighborhood in the capital city. You can join us, 860-275-7266. Rita's calling from Stamford. Rita, I understand you grew up in Frog Hollow.
Well, my parents grew up in Frog Hollow. Our family, our nuclear family, moved up to Foster Heights. But we all belong to St. Anne's Church, and so even though we didn't live in the neighborhood as I grew up, we attended St. Anne's School and had a very full parish life. Obviously, over the years, things changed. I was at St. Anne's through the 60s and 70s, and it was obvious that the demographic of the neighborhood was changing, but as previous callers have said, we were all friends. It was very walkable, very friendly, very safe, but gradually changing, and now it's hardly recognizable as the place that I grew up in, and yet I'm excited to see new businesses and families again. Unfortunately, St. Anne's didn't survive even after they tried to join parishes of Immaculate Conception and St. Anne's together to reach a dwindling French population, but increasing Puerto Rican and even Haitian. So it's near and dear to my heart, but it has changed dramatically in my lifetime.
Thank you for your call. Susan, she mentions churches who really were the foundation for a lot of these communities having to consolidate because population was declining, people were leaving for the burbs. We had talked earlier about the quality of housing had deteriorated, and many of the people that were left in Frog Hollow were minorities. When things get bad, people get frustrated. Tell us about some of the other forces that changed what was happening on the streets of Frog Hollow, including gang activity.
I think Alta can address gang activity even more so. She was there during that time as well. But
I think the frustration can't be discounted. And I'm sitting here listening to Alta talk about the not so subtle actions of some people to move people out of the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and to move people who would cause trouble into the neighborhood. And it was strictly a bottom line situation. And it just is so sad because, as the previous caller said, the neighborhood has changed, but it didn't just happen that way. And to watch the forces, not of nature, walk in and try and destroy a neighborhood is really angering, just mad.
Alta, can you add to that, remembering when you saw gang activity growing from the 70s and then roaring back in the 90s, how did the city respond?
Well, at that point in time, we had in the Frog Hollow neighborhood the Latin Kings and Los Solitos. My street, Affleck Street, was a Los Solitos street. And unlike gang activity in most areas, one street was Latin Kings, and maybe around the corner or adjacent to it, it was the Los Solitos. So they were constantly bumping up against each other. And Affleck Street had a drive-by shooting, as many streets in Frog Hollow. The federal government at this point in time, I mean, it was really bad. The federal government designated Hartford as one of 16 cities to receive special funding from the Department of Justice to attempt to deal with the violence and the drug selling. And Hartford put together a program, the police department, the city under Mayor Mike, and the neighborhoods called Comprehensive Communities Partnership. And it involved organizing every single neighborhood in Hartford, bringing the residents out to meetings where they would meet with the police department and with the city, department heads, licenses and inspection, public works, whatever. And they also corralled all of the law enforcement agencies from the FBI, DEA, ATF, state's attorney, the federal attorney, and they corralled everyone into a strategy of analyzing it, what is actually happening. And the upshot of that was that there was a lot of investigation. The gang leaders were sentenced on RICO charges, racketeering charges, not drug charges. And they were charged in federal court, not state court. So in federal court, you served your full sentence. It wasn't like state court where they released people if they were overcrowded or you got off for good behavior or whatever. And so I think that really made a significant, significant difference in the level of gang activity in Hartford. After that, the neighborhood groups began to be able to reclaim the neighborhood. I mean, my street put up a community garden in an area where a house burnt down because of drug activity inside a boarded up house. So it was a partnership that really led to the reclaiming of Hartford. And it was a very slow and gradual process. It involved institutions like Trinity College, Hartford Hospital. They put together a SINA at that point, to help deal with some of the housing problems right near their campuses. It really was a partnership, and it lasted for a fairly decent length of time. That's what I think was the most important thing in reclaiming the neighborhood. It wasn't just the police activity. It was the police activity combined with a multifaceted effort by the city department heads.
Susan, in your book, you write about Operation Liberty. What were the lasting impacts of that, and what exactly happened there?
I think some of Operation Liberty, we would look at those tactics and say, ooh, I don't know about that. And it was almost a search and frisk. But I do think, as Alta said, I think by focusing on the leaders of the gangs and focusing in federal courts, that the lasting impact was the neighborhoods. It allowed the neighbors in the neighborhoods to take back their blocks.
Meanwhile, some of the people arrested and charged and convicted on these crimes still in jail today? And what's
still
the impact
today.
Of that on families that were in Frog Hollow, who might be their members
family
of the
family? Members. That's a good question, and that would probably be a good follow-up. I do want to say, though, that some of the people, and I don't want to sound Pollyanna, but some of the people who were involved in gang activities at the time reformed themselves. I don't know about the ones in prison, but actually became leaders in the community and also not just with outreach for children who might be vulnerable.
This is Where We Live. Susan Campbell is with us. Her new book, Frog Hollow, Stories from an American Neighborhood. We just heard from Alta Lash, a longtime resident of Frog Hollow. And I wanted to bring into the conversation now another former business owner who has roots in Frog Hollow, Leticia Cotto. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Lucy.
I understand you opened, your former business was La Paloma Sabanera Coffee House and Bookstore in the early 2000s. When I moved to Connecticut in 2006, La Paloma was a great place to go to understand the happenings in the capital city. But tell me about what was going on in the neighborhood in 2000 that led you and your brother to open up this business.
Our intentions were to open up a coffee house and bookstore with a focus on Spanish language books and coffee from Latin American countries. So we knew we wanted to be on Park Street or in the Frog Hollow neighborhood near Park Street. We were intentional about identifying our customer base and with the thought and the themes of the business itself. So we looked on Park Street because we really believed in the concept of having a small business that that highlighted culture, highlighted literature, and highlighted those special things about the Latino community. And we looked on Park Street and were not able to find a open storefront or space for the business, and Capitol Avenue then ended up being the location that we chose.
Tell us about your family roots and what you remember about the Frog Hollow neighborhood, even before you opened up the business.
I grew up in the north end of Hartford, and what I remember about Park Street is a lot of the things that still happen today with the families that live in the neighborhood. After church, we would go and eat in the restaurants on Park Street. Immaculate Conception Church was one of the churches that we frequented a lot. Youth group meetings in the basement of that church, youth dances in the basement of that church, and just a lot of community work in parish life. So you guys were talking about parish life earlier. That was huge growing up in Hartford on Park Street as well.
I understand you were also former branch manager of the Hartford Public Library Park branch, that you also were engaging with the Frog Hollow Neighborhood Revitalization Group, and you were able to talk with residents. But what was their response to, quality of life issues? How did they feel City Hall was responding or not responding to them?
Mm-hmm. So working at the library, you get a lot of different perspectives, and I think that even today, we have residents who did care and still do care a lot about equity with education and housing and health care. And the library provided that opportunity, and the NRZ meetings and community meetings provided that opportunity for residents to be able to voice their concerns and their needs in what they wanted with the city. The NRZ brought together those constituents and people from the city to be able to listen to those voices. But there was always concerns about safety, light, housing, and like I said, education.
Susan Campbell, when we look at the residents of Frog Hollow today, in your book, you profile some of them. Again, Frog Hollow, Stories from an American Neighborhood. Do they feel neglected today?
I would say yes. But I would look to Leticia to say, am I right?
I think that the residents in the Frog Hollow neighborhood, I wouldn't say that, you know what? I wouldn't say that there's a mix. I would say that there's a mix. I think that there are conversations that occur, like I said, in community meetings. And for example, there's going to be a new park branch that's going to be opening on Park Street late 2020. And that's a project that's, 20 years plus in the making. And in that history of community building and community advocacy, there have been many, many community members that have advocated for that project and are still live in Frog Hollow. So there's a mixture of residents who are connected and are civically engaged and fight hard for their voices to be heard.
We spoke a lot about the out-migration from this neighborhood, Susan, but who's moving in there today? And maybe Leticia and Alta can also add to this. Leticia?
So Alta and Susan did talk about, a diverse neighborhood, and Frog Hollow still is very diverse. There's a lot of Guatemalan families, a lot of Dominican, Mexicans, definitely Puerto Ricans, we've come across Peruvians, Colombians, and so, and the businesses on the Park Street corridor reflect that diversity.
Alta, did you want to add to how the community continues to change?
I think the significant number of non-Puerto Ricans is a more recent development. Leticia is absolutely correct about the variety of Latin American and South American cultures on Park Street. I think there's also an influx of some West Indians, mm-hmm. Particularly closer to Trinity College. And I've seen people, dressed in Islamic clothing, and I see them on Broad Street. So I think it's a really, truly diverse area at this point, and that's one of the advantages of the neighborhood.
Susan, that was kind of the theme throughout the book, is the classic immigrant story. People come because of jobs or because of family connections. Some leave, but the churn is still there,
yeah.
And that's something that you still see as you walk Frog Hollow streets today.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, isn't it? You also have, and this is the numbers are still pretty low, but you have millennials who are looking for affordable housing, and housing is affordable in Frog Hollow, and they also want that city feel that they might not get in their suburban homes or even other neighborhoods in Hartford. So it is quite mixed.
We got a tweet from Sean who writes, if we look back, many of us in Connecticut have roots in neighborhoods like Frog Hollow. Growing up in Waterbury, I didn't think I had a connection to Hartford. I was wrong. I have ancestors that lived on Broad Street and Ward Street. Places like Frog Hollow helped create the Connecticut we know today.
Oh.
We're going to continue our conversation after the break. I do want to thank Alta Lash for joining us, Executive Director of United Connection Action for Neighborhoods, or UCAN, and a longtime resident of Frog Hollow. Alta, thanks for your perspective.
Thank you very much.
Susan Campbell will stay with us, author of the new book, Frog Hollow, Stories from an American Neighborhood. Also in studio with us, Leticia Cotto, former owner of La Paloma Sabanera Coffee House and Bookstore, which was located in Frog Hollow. And we're going to hear from some business owners today who see Capitol Avenue as a great place to open a shop. And you can join us, too. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. We've been learning about Frog Hollow today with Susan Campbell, whose new book focuses on this overlooked Hartford neighborhood. You can join us, too. I wanted to take a phone call. Billy from Middletown. Billy, what's your question?
Hi. I've always loved Frog Hollow neighborhood. I used to live in Hartford. I live in Middletown now, but I go into Hartford quite a bit. But I saw a TV show about urban renewal in different cities around the country, and they were amazing, some of the things they're doing. Baltimore and Detroit, all these places, it's just incredible. And I was thinking that in Hartford, the Park Street area, the Frog Hollow neighborhood would be perfect for a major urban renewal plan. Is there any kind of efforts going towards that?
Good question, Billy. Susan, I'll go to you first before I take Sarah. When we think about urban renewal and development, what that means for an area and what plans have happened or have been talked about in the city of Hartford that we know of?
I think there's a lot of individual efforts. I don't know, and I'm looking to Leticia, I don't know that there's an overarching we're going to go in here. There's pros and cons to that. I don't know that there's a huge plan.
Not a huge plan other than, you know, one of the biggest construction projects that will be happening on Park Street is the new development of the Hartford Public Library Park Branch. And that supports economic development, economic revitalization as well.
When we talk about the pros and cons, so some of the cons, depending on development, is good, but you don't want to push out people, right, or you see rent going up. I mean, is that what we're talking about? And when we think about the pros and cons, so some of the cons, development, people like to say, is good, but does that mean certain people could be pushed out or rents could go up? I mean, that can be the flip side of that.
Yeah, so in terms of when I think about economic revitalization and, you know, small business owners coming into the Frog Hollow neighborhood, it's about really looking at how you're connecting to that community, right? And who you want to bring in or how you're going to connect with the existing community that's already there, and how do you build community? And I think that works towards moving away from development that will move people out. The Frog Hollow and Park Street is a very lively neighborhood. And I continue to talk about Park Street because it still is a walkable street. It still is a friendly street. And so I think that there are perceptions that kind of like give it a bad name. And in order to work towards revitalization, we need to look at the positives and the assets that are in that neighborhood to build upon those.
Mm. Susan, did you want to add?
Yeah, I'm nodding and amening because if it's not broke, don't fix it. And Park Street has historically been this incredible arterial for business, and it is now as well, and I wouldn't want to mess with that.
Joining us on the phone right now is Sarah McCoy, one of three owners of Story and Soil Coffee. It's a shop located in Frog Hollow right on Capitol Avenue. It's a good transition to our conversation. Sarah, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about when you and your co-owners were thinking about opening up a coffee shop. Why Frog Hollow?
Well, when my husband and I really sat down to open the business, we knew we didn't want to be downtown. We knew we wanted to be part of a community and part of a neighborhood. And we checked out a couple of different neighborhoods and just felt like the space on Capitol Avenue was a manageable size for us and really pulled, wouldn't rely on one type of customer. We have state workers, we have commuters, we have the neighborhood residents, and we always wanted to be, that kind of place where the whole community would gather and converse and talk about what was going on.
And how has the neighborhood responded to your presence on Capitol Ave?
Overall, it's been very positive. We get a number of regulars who, you know, have lived around the corner for decades, and come to us as part of their morning routine, and we love that. But we also get a good amount of people from the suburbs who make our shop a destination.
Sarah, we've talked and heard a lot about the diversity found in Frog Hollow, and we're just wondering, as you've been open now for a while, thinking about how you're mindful of that diversity and welcoming all people into your coffee shop.
Yeah, it's certainly something that we think about a lot. Coffee shops nationally have, I think, kind of a bad reputation for gentrification and for coming into a neighborhood and all of a sudden the rent is too high. And And that we were very mindful of that. So we've put a priority on hiring Hartford residents. We've had a nonprofit come in to do race and equity training for our staff on how we can better meet the needs and serve. We're in the hospitality business and serve our community.
Leticia Cotto, what's your reaction to these new businesses on Capitol Ave, Story and Soil just being one of them? There's a Bon Me shop. There's, I think, Little River Restoratives, which is in the former location of La Paloma when it moved.
I think it's exciting. It's exciting that small business owners are coming into Frog Hollow, Capitol Avenue, and really looking at the neighborhood to bring a diversity. And in doing so, it's also being intentional about connecting with other areas of Frog Hollow and hiring people from the neighborhood, connecting with other businesses or agencies outside of Capitol Avenue and extending that reach so that you can build those bridges between local residents and people who are coming from outside of the city of Hartford, outside of the state, into the neighborhood.
Sarah, as a business owner, what do you think the city should do to help people like yourself or other businesses, but also still connecting and respecting the neighborhood and the people that live there?
Oh, geez, I feel like that's a big question. The city does not necessarily make it easy to find a clear path and a clear checklist of things you need to do to open a business. So you really have to be pretty industrious to make sure all of your T's are crossed and I's are dotted. So support for the process, I think, would be really helpful. And I think every small business would also have to include funding of, people will say that they like the city because of these small businesses and the culture that that is created from these small businesses, yet the city doesn't support that in any real financial way. At least that's been our experience. And so, you know, we pay our taxes and we take care of our property, but it's not always easy to do that. Yet we offer a great benefit to the community, we feel.
Well, Sarah McCoy, again, one of the three owners of Story and Soil Coffee, right on Capitol Ave in the Frog Hollow neighborhood. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Susan Campbell, we just have a couple minutes left. Obviously, this book that you wrote, Frog Hollow, Stories from American Neighborhood, filling in a lot of the history that we didn't know. But is part of your aim to raise awareness about how to support this neighborhood so that more buildings don't close and the people that live there have a good quality of life?
You know, originally my aim was, oh, my gosh, these are cool stories. I want to share them. And then now it's become the book ended up being a love letter to Hartford, which I didn't realize I wanted to write, but also a love letter to the notion that there are going to be people coming in who aren't like us, and they only make us stronger. As far as Frog Hollow, maybe the answer is small businesses, millions and millions of small businesses. I don't know that industry's coming back, the big industries, but I do think that when individuals want to open these coffee shops, the dress shops, you name it, bakeries, then we can support them.
Susan Campbell, again, author of the new book, Frog Hollow, Stories from an American Neighborhood. You're going to be speaking about your book this evening at Barnes & Noble, Yukon Hartford Bookstore on Front Street. We're going to have more information on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. Susan, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lucy.
And I want to thank Leticia Cotto also for coming in, former owner of La Paloma Sabanera Coffee House and Bookstore, located in Frog Hollow, or was located, also former branch manager of the Hartford Public Library Park Branch. Leticia, a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Lucy.
Today's show produced by Lydia Brown. Thanks to Seth Blair on the phones, and our technical producer is Kyone Wolf. You can learn more about the show at wmpr.org/where we live. This note, tomorrow we're going to talk about the value of a history education. It's important, right? We're going to talk about how the history we learn in school, also efforts by African-American students and others, students of color in Connecticut, to require African-American and Latino studies in schools. And of course, course, we want to hear from you, too, that conversation tomorrow. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. As always, thanks for listening.